Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 27th of April, 2022. I'm joined by Carl.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Twitter, already changing, Tim Pool's spooky, scary billboard, and also the distant right goes mainstream. Mm. And we do actually have some announcements to make first, which is first, of course, being the gold tier Zoom call. So if you are a gold tier member or want to, and would like to come and hang out, then we do a gold tier Zoom call at the end of the month. And this one will be at 3:30 UK time this coming Friday, in which you can come hang out and I'll take questions and whatnot. And just have fun. So that's nice. So come and join that. Also, I think you have a thank you to make.
Yeah, a big thank yous to Luke Farmer for the letter and gift. The I don't know whether you can see it, but it's a sort of copy of one of the Armana letters, which is a series of letters from within the Egyptian Empire that were discovered at Tel Armana. And the letter itself is written in Akkadian cuneiform, I think, where they're just basically saying, look, we're being attacked by the Hippiru. Send us archers, and if you don't, we're going to lose this province. And it's just like, you know, ancient military thing. But I really like it. It looks great, and we've put it up there, so thank you. And Stee, your 3D printed terrain arrived today, so thanks very much, and you'll be able to see that on my Instagram in the next few weeks, I imagine. So thanks a lot.
Organize the battle.
Yes.
Anyway, without further ado, I suppose we'll move into Twitter changing.
You'll notice then that Twitter has already changed. Things are happening, and Elon Musk hasn't even actually taken over the company yet. The purchase isn't even finalized as of yet, but things are already different. And one of the things that I've seen people doing is posting things that would previously have got you banned. Things like talking about what the anti-vaxxers were talking about, saying, oh, maybe there are things about the vaccine that aren't exactly perfect. Things we can't even really say on YouTube, in fact. Am I allowed to say that?
I don't know. I think no.
Okay. Fine.
I'll censor it.
Okay, great. Well, stuff that we can't put on YouTube, we had to put on lotuses.com. And of course, talking about the horse paste narrative, because you couldn't talk about the horse paste either on Twitter and probably not on YouTube. And so if you would like to know the sorts of things you weren't allowed to say on those platforms, well, feel free to come and support us by signing up on the website. But this is the point. You are going at some point to be able to talk about these forbidden yet true subjects that are not like bigoted or anything like that on Twitter itself. And you can see how all of this came about, and you can see that Elon Musk is in touch with what the problem was. He posted this: the extreme antibody reaction from those who fear free speech says it all. Yes, it does. There are certain hegemonic narratives that are being upheld by people on Twitter, which filter through the various politicians, institutions, and essentially embed themselves over our reality, that mean that if people are allowed to speak truthfully, well, what happens?
They won't prioritize those weird fringe narratives about
precisely
intersectionalism, because it's not what people actually want.
It's not just intersectionalism. It's about vaccines. It's about, you know, any of these sorts of taboo subjects. Yeah, exactly. But it's not even just necessarily left-wing. It's about the managerialness of the whole thing, the allowance of experts to take over civilization. That's what was being facilitated by Twitter. And Elon Musk, with his free speech, is going to upend this apple cart and actually allow us to live in peace. And so he posts a follow-up to this, which is, I think, is a useful thing to understand his view on what free speech is. He says, by free speech, I simply mean that which matches the law. And of course, in America, they have the First Amendment, which means practically anything goes, which is good. Which is what we should have in Britain, Boris. I'm against censorship if that goes far beyond the law. If people want less free speech, they will ask government to pass laws to that effect. Therefore, going beyond the law is contrary to the will of the people. Now, that's fine. That's a perfectly reasonable syllogism. That makes perfect sense and seems very, very, well, like I said, reasonable, frankly.
This is also insurance, because at the same time he was being warned by the EU, mm-hmm, and particularly Germany,
yep,
that we have laws that criminalise quite a lot of things.
Yes, and which is why people constantly get messages, you've been criminalised in Germany for something you tweeted. And an American's just like, ha ha ha, I don't care.
Yeah, and the same with Pakistan and so forth, yeah, is that he'll be able to do as he wishes in the United States, but everywhere else in the world, because it's not a free planet, no, and he is basically signalling to those governments, I will abide by the law as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he's right to do so, because otherwise
there's nothing else you can do.
Exactly. What are his choices here? But anyway, there are also rumours that he is going to be moving the headquarters of Twitter to Miami. Now, this is not in any way confirmed, but man, this would be a really good idea.
I mean, we were joking about him saying to Ron DeSantis, hey, how about I buy some swamp land and I'll develop it? And in return, an especially economic zone where I have my own laws.
Yeah, can I be a little self-governing enclave? I mean, I hear you've done something similar in Florida recently.
Elon Musk land.
Yeah, exactly. A global Twitter HQ in Miami would be amazing. You can imagine just how different the tone of Twitter would end up becoming if the people running it were not social justice warriors from California. Anyway, so the response to this was hilarious. I mean, you get people like Sean King, who deleted their account and then came back and claimed they didn't delete their account because, of course, that was them taking a massive public L. And, I mean, Sean, we all saw you delete your account. Like, everyone could see it. But it doesn't matter.
It's clear as day and as white as white.
Moving on. Sean decided to continue owning himself by posting stuff like this. Ask any conservative this question and watch them struggle to answer it. You're ready for a struggle, Callum?
I think I'll manage.
Since you say free speech and all speech needs to be allowed on Twitter, does that mean you believe that should include targeted hate speech against Jews? Should that be allowed? Be specific and clear. What kind of replies do you think he got to this?
Yes.
2,500 quote tweets of people saying, yeah.
Yeah. Hate speech isn't real. Go to hell.
Which is exactly what Quarter Black Garrett put, actually. Hate speech doesn't exist. So the very premise of your question is nonsense. Also, I don't care. People insult me for being a white man. Well, when I was on Twitter, for being on Twitter all day. If you're going to insult people for these characteristics, well, equality, frankly.
Targeted hate speech against whites is not only the norm, it's also, well, legal
preferred
in law for hiring practices in the West. So, yeah.
Mm. So anyway, let's go over to Twitter HQ. How do you think they're taking the news? It's not well. So this is an interesting post. Elon Musk has now publicly agreed with amplified criticisms from the right of two individual Twitter employees today. Well, I hope they're enjoying the idea of moving to Florida. One accusing its top policy executive of censorship, Parag Agrawal. Yeah, he was pro-censorship, yeah. And the other accusing the company lawyer of facilitating fraud.
Hmm? She. Parag.
Yeah, the lawyer is she, and we'll get to her in a minute. And that's interesting how she's being accused of facilitating fraud. Hmm. Very interesting. But I like the follow-up to this tweet. Imagine getting up and going to work in the morning for a company whose new owner is systematically attacking your colleagues for his 84 million followers in public on the site you work for and knowing you might be next. This is the worst case scenario Twitter employees feared. Good.
I'm old Google on this one. Just don't be evil.
Well, yeah, but they don't know how to not be evil.
I know, but it's just, like, if you scroll back up, I mean, the two examples there that are given, it's just one where someone is just a censorious piece of ass, and then the other person who has apparently committed fraud. Just don't do that.
Yeah. But the Twitter employees, it's literally like the Orcs of Mordor being like, oh my God, Gandalf just took over the Dark Tower. Are we in trouble? Yeah, you're in trouble. And you deserve to be in trouble. And stop being evil.
But you also know you deserve to be in trouble.
Exactly. I mean, that's why you're afraid.
That's the revealing thing about all of this, is, as Elon says, the antibody reaction to, we should have free speech. And they all know they're in trouble because they're like, oh crap.
But what about my lies?
I've been shutting that down for years.
Yeah. And so the Twitter employees, like I said, is the worst case scenario, which is why they're literally crying in their meetings. I mean, literally in tears. This is just so, so good. This is the woman who banned me from Twitter, who's actually in tears. So this was Vijaya Gad, and you may remember her from her appearance on the Joe Rogan podcast with Tim Pool and Jack Dorsey, where she was reading out how I had called a bunch of Nazis the K word, and that was why I was banned from Twitter. And Joe Rogan found that funny, and Tim Pool's like, it's not funny. Yeah, come on, Tim, it is.
But it's obviously as well just, oh no, not the dear Nazis.
Yeah, like exactly, yeah. Twitter job, no, not the Nazis. It's like, oh, sorry. Can't insult them that way. But anyway, she is a key executive involved in decisions to remove former Donald Trump and me, the important person here, and ban political advertising. She expressed uncertainty about the future of the platform, literally in tears. Monday was an emotional day at Twitter, even for executives. Shortly after, billionaire Elon Musk bought the powerful social media platform. And again, I love the fact they admit, okay, yeah, this was actually one of the seats of our power. You know, this was really important, and Elon Musk has just kicked in the door, and there's nothing we can do about it, and now we're all going to go and cry in the corner about it, right? Vijaya Gadde called a virtual meeting with the policy and legal team she oversees to discuss the new ownership, what the new ownership can mean for them. Gadde cried during the meeting as she expressed concerns about how the company could change. You love to see it.
Why are you crying?
Yeah. What's with all the tears? You're probably going to get a pay rise.
But again, it's another reveal. It's yeah, a self-report absolutely. That, yeah, I know I deserve to be punished for what I've done.
Yeah. This is the mouth of Sauron weeping as Aragorn confronts him. Well, I'm so sorry that you're upset that your reign of terror is coming to an end, that the heroes have finally returned to undo all the evil you've spread across the land. Oh, this is terrible for you. How awful. I mean, just honestly. And that's according to three people who were in the meeting. They spoke to Blizzard and like, yeah, she cried. She acknowledged that there are significant uncertainties about what the company will look like under Musk's leadership. That's excellent news. Because if they weren't crying, they'd be like, wow, it's business as usual. But no, they know it's all going to change, and they don't know what's going to come next, which is wonderful. Gadde has incidentally worked at Twitter since 2011, so she's definitely the person who banned me, and he's the key executive charged with overseeing Twitter's trust and safety, legal and public policy functions. She is seen internally as Twitter's, quote, moral authority. Damn, this is exactly the woman. And the executive tasked with handling sensitive issues like harassment and dangerous speech. Gadde holds one of the most controversial positions at Twitter. She decides how the team moderates content. This has made her a target of right-wing criticism, but no left-wing criticism.
Nope.
And she was instrumental behind the decision to block the New York Post article about Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden. Very interesting.
I mean, the most guilty person there, though.
Yes. She is literally the person. And I imagine, honestly, right, I said this a while ago, that I felt Jack Dorsey was kind of enthralled to the people beneath him. I think this is the person, which is why she was on the thing, answering all the questions, while Jack Dorsey was just sat there, like, whipped, basically. And hopefully, under Elon Musk, Jack Dorsey gets to come out and post ends on Twitter like he used to. You remember that tweet, don't you?
He's a good boy.
Yeah. Anyway, so they say it's unclear so far what Musk's acquisition will mean for Twitter and for Gadde's future with the company. Well, I think that if Elon Musk is sensible, she'll just get fired. Executives at an all-hand meeting on Monday demurred when employees asked what Musk's leadership will mean for Twitter's policies. Yeah, they're screwed. They're screwed. Because we know, like, what Elon Musk's view on these sorts of things are. I don't think he'd be in favour of suppressing the news about Hunter Biden's laptop, which all turned out to be true, incidentally. If you can go to the next one, John. As you can see, someone here had posted Vijaya Gadde, the top censorship advocate at Twitter, who famously gaslit the world on Joe Rogan's podcast and censored the Hunter Biden laptop story, is very upset about the Elon Musk takeover. Yes, indeed. And Elon Musk replies to this, saying, suspending the Twitter account of a major news organization for publishing a truthful story was obviously incredibly inappropriate. You love to see it. Love how this is going. The anti-disinformation political universe is completely shook by this. We'll get to the next one. There's a clip from MSNBC with the woman saying, well, look, his takeover of Twitter has sent shockwaves through much of the anti-disinformation political universe. So, yeah, I bet they're totally...
The propaganda department.
Yes.
Is upset because a man has turned up and said, how about we have free speech?
Yeah.
I mean, that is all that is.
I'd like to hear the other side of the story. And they're just like, oh my God, everything's effed, you know? Like, they will not have a monopoly over what counts as true or false anymore. And think about just the scale of the monopoly in the last 2 years that we've seen.
Could you imagine saying that 10, 20 years ago?
No.
All human speech online would be controlled by this weird monopoly.
No. And like, you know, if you post something, we'll have fact checkers who only have a one-sided view of things, who will always, and you know, will actually actively just take things down or put a screen over it so people can't even read it and stuff like that. And that's all going to end, I suspect, under Elon Musk. You know, thank God. And they and literally MSNBC, well, look, if Elon Musk does this to Twitter, then our business model is in trouble. Okay, good.
I don't care. Your business model relies upon you being a censorious monopoly that crushes all dissent.
Yeah, maybe that was the wrong business to go into. Just saying. Anyway, so this has resulted in a lot of people seeing their accounts unsuspended, which I find interesting. This is just one of my favorites, Jeremy from Geeks and Gamers. Good channel, did nothing wrong. He got his Twitter account unsuspended all of a sudden, which is nice. Ian Miles Chung got made like official, which is weird. Like, if you scroll up to the previous one, right, he had accounts restrictions lifted and, like, is now a professional Twitter account. that he had applied for multiple times but had never been given for some reason. It's like, that's weird, because he absolutely is a professional, you know, influencer, as they say. And so it's like, okay, why now? What's changed? You know, and this is very, very interesting. Now, there are still important people who are banned from Twitter, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, her personal account, and mine, obviously. I haven't actually appealed mine yet. We'll see. But so it's not like the job is done yet or anything like that, because ultimately, I want everyone restored. I want Tommy Robinson, Milo, Alex Jones. I want the lot. Everyone back. And I want to see what happens, because it's going to be chaos. Absolute pandemonium.
Well, no, for us, it will be basically nothing.
Well, for us, it would be glorious.
No, for us, because it's the I saw a meme earlier of, well, what if they bring Alex Jones back on? And someone photoshopped it. So Alex Jones, Joe Rogan.
Yeah, Vidya, I saw the clip. Yeah.
And Alex Jones just starts saying some stuff. And you have Elon just smoking there in this edit. Just be like, but that's the thing. It's just like, it's not really.
Nothing happens.
No, for people who are used to a free speech zone, and this is normal. This is fine.
Yeah. And this was what was fun about the internet before the progressives took over.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like I said, a lot of things have been changing, and obviously something has changed in the algorithm behind the scenes. Now, Twitter had previously locked this to make sure that no rabid employee could just like sabotage the site and crash it all. But if you look at, this is Tucker Carlson's Twitter account. If you can bring up that image, John, that's really weird, isn't it? That's not, really, really weird.
Not really.
You don't think so?
No. Because this
you don't think gaining 62,000 subscribers in a day is weird?
No.
When you get losing 50 normally.
Because you can remember the circumstance before. Like, up until that day, Twitter is still a leftist hive mind that every conservative in the world is saying, don't be on, you know, you're just going to get banned, it's a waste of time, screw that place anyway. And then all of a sudden, we've all realized, okay, well, actually, the guy in charge is going to change things. So everyone is signaling, okay, we'll go back on, see what happens.
Maybe, but I've seen a lot of people saying they're getting just a massive increase in engagement as well. As in, and people like
more people on,
but not just that though. I saw a tweet from Dean Cain where like saying, "Oh, you know, people have been saying to me, oh, I can see your tweets again." As in, people who never left Twitter can suddenly still now see his what he's posting, because I don't doubt there was some kind of suppression algorithm.
That... I imagine so. I'm not saying this isn't the case. I mean, we have given examples such as when Jack Dorsey admitted that he censored Republican candidates, partisanly as well. But to say that because there's a big boost all of a sudden, this must be just the work of the algorithm, I think majoritively this is just user changes.
Well, maybe, but I suspect it's also something to do with algorithmic interference as well. And what that takes on the aspect of is kind of like shredding papers before the new owner gets here. Like, we've got to get rid of all this. Just get rid of it all. You know, put it all back to how it was, you know, so he doesn't see it. That's honestly how this is coming across to me.
That's how I imagine this happened with the verified or the social media thing with Miles Chung. Because the way that works, because of the interview with Ryan Hartwig, he just explained to me, look, that's all handled by like moderation teams, which are kind of external, but they're given guidance from HQ about what to do and who to interact with and who not to.
Yeah.
So I think that guidance is essentially being shredded because that was just all hyper-partisan absolute nonsense that could be exposed.
Obviously.
And so that's definitely been destroyed. Yeah. But as for people joining all of a sudden, I'm not usually surprised by.
But I would be surprised if it was A, this much, and B, it's just this consistent.
I mean, like, these guys are huge as well.
Sure, but like, it's for everyone. Like, I've been following a lot of people, like, smaller accounts, and they're all saying, well, you know, the guys in the office are saying, well, I've noticed a significant increase as well.
Yeah.
So
you go and click on the accounts and they're all joining now.
Maybe, and I'm not saying that it's not that people aren't joining, but I'm also in of the mind that I think some weighing of the scales has been done. Thumb on the scale behind the scenes, and that thumb has been lifted, I think. And you notice there have been more, if you go to the next one. You can see that you know, people like Ben Shapiro are gaining massively, and people like Cenk Uygur are losing, which is very interesting.
But again, it's consistent. It's, you know, Ben Shapiro's crowd have been told not to go on Twitter because it's crap, and it is. And then, well, okay, might be worth it.
It
Whereas,
might be.
Chunky Boys thinking... No, I'm going to leave evil
but
man.
I don't know. I don't think that the leftists are mass quitting Twitter, or at least not in the scale that they're talking. I mean, I suppose they're saying it, so maybe. But
going back to Tumblr, and good riddance.
Yeah, but the leftist losses are quite significant as well. We actually have a list of a few, right? Rachel Maddow lost 18,000. Anson Cooper lost 10,000. AOC lost 27,000. Kamala Harris lost 22,000. Hillary Clinton lost 17,000. I mean, it just makes it look like the game was rigged and that the rigging has been released. But maybe it's lots of people quitting, lots of people joining. Who knows? We do not know. Anyway, Let's move on. We'll skip the next one, John, because we already covered it. Right, so let's talk about the reaction to this from, the people who are benefiting from the previous regime. Let's play the clip.
And in fact, on Twitter, it is predominantly straight white men. So when Elon Musk says, wow, this is about free speech, it seems to me that it's about free speech of straight white men. And so let them have it. Let them just go at it. I enjoy the block button on Twitter. I think it has a real outsized influence in our world because politicians and celebrities are on it.
The cope. The complete capitulation as well. Not putting up any kind of, well, okay, fine. Just go and insult each other online then if you have to. Yeah, that's fine. That's what we want.
Got to have the race politics in there though.
Yeah.
Majority of people are white men online in politics.
They're everywhere.
Therefore, this is all about white men. Yeah, of course.
Okay. Yeah. And you get the Jezebel take that I thought we'd end on this. Elon's takeover will suck for women. It's the view, the view of the view and the view of Jezebel. Love it. Fingers crossed, I guess.
You see Joy Reid's response to this. She was interviewing some, mental asylum patient.
Yep.
And he was saying about the fact, well, they've tried to censor all the sexism and racism and it's still there, even before. But now it's going to go terrible again. It's like, okay. Even with all your special fifis being taken care of, it's still there. Right.
Yeah. We could go through this, but we don't have time. There's no point. So good news, though, for people not using Twitter. Apparently, women are just joining Getter instead.
Based.
Yeah, Alyssa Milano, Deborah Messing, and other high-profile progressives have announced plans to leave Twitter and switch to Getter after Elon Musk purchase, which is great. They can follow me on Getter at Carl Benjamin, incidentally. And
come and join about dunking on the women.
Come and join me for some good old-fashioned misogyny. feel free to use that blob button, I guess. I mean, there's a final thing, and I think this is a good thing to end on, that I forgot to tell you that I'd added to the document. It's Bo's latest article on Lotus Eaters, in which it begins in sort of hyperbolic fashion, where he's like, arise King Elon the First, because this is, Elon has...
That thumbnail.
It's great, isn't it? It's a really, really, really good read. But the first point that he makes is really good, right? Elon Musk has done this topsy-turvy world of ours a profound and meaningful service by taking Twitter out of the hands of insane leftists who hate men, capitalism, and the West. I mean, if they've proved it, they've proved it, right? He's not wrong with that description at all.
It's just a lot more things need to be added.
Yeah,
it's been here all year.
Yeah, it's just brief, right? By removing Twitter from the sickening grasp of subversive maggots like Parag Agrawal and Vijaya Gad, King Elon has spared us from a continued deluge of hate and gaslighting. I mean, that's definitely true. Go read the rest of Bo's article. It's so fantastic. But he's exactly right. This is an incredibly significant turning point in the culture war. Because there are a lot of people who I've seen, like, in the sort of right-wing circles, who are like, is this significant? It's like, this is massively significant. And you can tell how significant this is by the level of screeching and outrage from the left. When they lose a significant fortress like Twitter, they know it. They feel the pain of it. And this is how you know you've done something really significant. This is how you know that Elon Caesar has stormed Elysia. And things like this. This was a huge deal for them. And that's how the right can know this was a huge win for them.
I'm 90% sure it's all going to be fine. But just before we began, there's 10% of me that's a little bit worried. The pressure might get to him, all the smear pieces that are going to come out calling him a white nationalist.
Like they haven't done all this anyway.
I know, but it's just there's a worry to me that he may end up buckling. Or he might start a purge. And there is a worry, though, whenever you take over, that you might purge too many people. I know it's going to sound silly at first.
No.
If you purge too many, then you may not actually have the staff to run the place.
Yeah.
Because it's such a big, dragon.
Yeah.
But if you purge too few, that's always fixable.
Yeah.
That's very easily fixable.
Yeah. You can always purge more, yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, if he moves it to Miami, then,
Yeah, I have got some worries about the thing. I saw Jason Miller from Getter was saying he's a bit over his head as well, because I don't know if he has the experience.
Well, he probably is.
But who knows? I guess we'll see. But I know that there is definitely a lot of purging that does need to be done. Mm. And I trust him to do that. Anyway, suppose when they're there. We'll move on to Tim Pool's spooky, scary billboard. So Tim Pool has put up a spooky, scary billboard about Taylor Rentz, the well, professional harasser.
Yes, I think it's the title. Doxer. Professional doxer.
Yeah, professional doxer. And I thought I'd start it off with some shilling. This is a premium video, which we did the live event, Why Feminist Immigration Policy Will Save the West, because apparently we need some more rational women in the West to take over Taylor's job.
The Ukrainian the Ukrainian solution, basically, to the immigration problem.
Basically, so go and give that a watch. But otherwise, we should get into the spooky, scary billboard. So we get the next one. We can see, for people who may not know, for some reason, what Taylor Lorenz did. So the article there from WashPo, just doxing libs of TikTok, giving out her personal address at first, before they then...
I love doxing a woman.
Yeah, doxing a woman as well. Name, personal address, why? Public interest.
Yeah.
No, there is no public interest.
But but you know what it is. And this follows on from the Elon Musk thing we just covered. It's because of the power of Twitter. They saw that lots of people were seeing what the final form of their ideology looks like. And they were like, well, wait a minute, this makes us look terrible. And Twitter's a really powerful place where public opinion is formed. Therefore, this person needs to be doxed and harassed off the internet.
I love how she put the argument backwards as well. It's like, because she's able to expose where her ideology goes, that makes her an important public figure because she's influencing the public.
Yes.
Therefore, her name and address is of public interest. It doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
No, the end point of your ideology is what's interesting about this TikTok.
Yeah, that's the only reason it was an important account.
Yeah. As you can see here, Matt Walsh dunking on them for this because they are complete scumbags, as he says, rightfully. And I suppose we'll move on from that. I love that he's going around with a billboard saying what's a woman to everyone as well. We'll go to the next one. We have Taylor, who has been doing the rounds, just telling people that she's an American hero. As you can see here, she says part of the reason she decided to dox libs of TikTok is because, for all we know, this could have been a foreign actor. Could have been a Russian.
So what if it was?
But even then, yeah.
What are you, a xenophobe?
Right, but also, it's obviously not, because she's done interviews in English with an English-American accent.
Right.
Continuously. Like, there's no way she's foreign, frankly. And then, even if it was, it doesn't matter. And as you can see, Jack Posobiec being like, she's telling people she's a patriotic hero. I mean, absolute psychopath.
But what's she doing? Well, it's a foreigner who's posting crazy leftist takes on TikTok. Oh no, that's a threat to the United States, is it?
I mean, if there's any...
What are you talking about?
I mean, if a Hungarian wants to do that,
yeah, exactly.
Like, no one's going to stop you.
Yeah, exactly. It's legal.
So it's also a good thing to do, yeah, to expose insanity.
Yeah, thank you very much for your service.
Yeah, so Tim Pool decided to get together. If we go to the next one, we can see he put up a billboard with Jeremy Boring, from the Daily Wire. And I love it. I love everything about it.
I was talking to Tim Pool the other day, and he was like, I'm going to put up a billboard. I think they'll reject it. I was like, yeah, they probably will. And then boom, next day, billboard up. Okay, they didn't reject it. Good news.
Apparently Jeremy used this to get his Razor adverts up as well. So right, presumably he's still got that contact, whoever it is. And Tim says in here, the Washington Post and Taylor Lorenz dox libs of TikTok. They included a link to private work details and an address listed as Lib's private home. They lied about it, so I got an ad in. Times Square calling them out, and thanks to Jeremy Boring for the assist.
Mm-hmm.
Which, beautiful. 1.4 million views on the video there alone.
Mm.
Never mind the actual people seeing it and whatnot, who have no idea what's going on, but now they know. They've been well informed. If we go to the next one, we can see Taylor, who is very mad, very upset, not happy. She decided to go with Tim Pool and the CEO of the Daily Wire, took out a giant billboard in Times Square today in an attempt to discredit my reporting on libs of TikTok.
Oh, no, Taylor. They were accepting that your reporting of the docs of libs of TikTok was accurate. Like, that's not discredited. I mean, that's involved. They're not saying Taylor Lorenz failed to dox libs of TikTok because she's incompetent.
No.
What they're saying is you're evil.
Mm-hmm. And you know that yourself, because there's no way you don't feel bad about what you've done.
Like, well,
maybe. You know what you did was wrong.
Unless, come on, look at these psychopaths.
She's got Amber Heard syndrome, I don't know.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But she decides to, underneath this, she said, this billboard is so undeniably so idiotic, it's hilarious, but don't forget that these campaigns have a much darker and more violent side.
Well, it can't be that hilarious then, can it?
No, but also, they've got, these sort of campaigns have a much darker and violent side. Oh, really? Oh, really, really?
Oh, like they're trying to get people to harass you, are they?
A certain, who else has done such a violent and dark such the campaigns? Who could have done such things in the past? Who else? It's you, Taylor.
But why is it idiotic? I mean, that's completely true. You did do these things.
You are the evil one in this situation, just by listing what happened, and you know it.
You look terrible.
But then her saying that this sort of thing is violent and dark, whereas, you know, her doxing a private individual and also censoring the tweets so no one except her followers can respond.
But no, so Tim Pool can reply.
Yeah. And she continues to say, I'm grateful to be in a newsroom that recognises these bad faith, politically motivated attacks and has a strong security team.
So the New York Times in favour of doxing people who make leftist ideology look bad. Got it. Got it. That's exactly what you're saying. We knew that already, Taylor.
But also, it's such a level of psychopathic insanity here, where she's like, you know, this is evil, but what I do is good and pure. But also, I'm glad that I've got a backing of multiple institutions.
I've got a strong
team.
Security team. You don't.
Liberty TikTok don't. Yeah. Absolutely doesn't. She also makes sure, of course, that only verified check marks
can respond. It's really the mask off, though, isn't it? The regime is like, yeah, you know what? This is just based on power. We're going to do this to you. And if you do it to us, you're just not strong enough to hurt us.
All the comments underneath as well, verified check marks supporting her.
Of course they
are. Just like the sycophantic people.
Yeah, exactly. They're the sycophants of the regime.
Mad. If we go to the next one, we can see her saying here as well, I'd love to know which media is buying the ads for this.
Because she's going to dox them too!
Yeah, so she wants to dox their name in the name of public interest as well. It's like, she really has learned nothing. I mean, genuinely, I think you're right. She doesn't feel anything. No, she is some kind of human ant.
But what I love about this, right, is that Jeff Bezos' newspaper, isn't it? Oh, no, it's New York Times, not the Washington Post.
I know, she moved to the Washington Post for this.
Oh, did she? Yeah. So this is the Washington Post, right.
She is a billionaire's surf.
Yeah, but the Jeff Bezos' giant newspaper, you know, old, austere, professional...
propaganda piece.
but it's in a very public spat with a Twitter account called Libs of TikTok. Like, how embarrassing. Like, Taylor Rance has dragged them down to this level, and like, yeah, well, they support me. It's like, well, that's stupid. Like, that's embarrassing.
But also, just look at those power dynamics. Like, you've got literally a billionaire's mouthpiece and a random individual. Like, which one of these is more authentic?
Yeah, exactly. Which one are you siding with? And which one's winning as well?
Yeah.
Like, you're losing the fight against a random Twitter account that posts TikTok videos? How, Taylor? Like, you've got these...
You thought this was going to be easy, wouldn't you? You really thought this was going to be a pushover. Oh, you lost. We move to the next one, because there's also something weird going on with her age. So, This is one of her sycophants, it seems.
Surely not a sycophant.
So this is one of the responses. The abuse that women over 40 have to deal with on this platform is horrifying.
Ooh.
And she responds with, make it make sense, America. So presumably they're friends.
But that's a horrible thing to say.
You're over 40.
She's 49.
What age is she?
49.
How do you know?
Because I've seen people posting it.
But there's that. Does that mean it's true?
No, I don't know.
Because nobody seems to know. Taylor Lorenz certainly doesn't know. By the looks of it.
No woman over 40 wants to admit her age, mate.
Yeah, the next one, because it's weird. You have this interview she gave, last year or whatever, and she was like, one in three women under 35 experience online harassment, such as her, who's suffered severe PTSD from being doxxed.
One thing to do is look at the sort of veiny neck that she has. That's not a young woman's neck.
Sorry, you're an expert in...
Yes.
Okay. No, I love the idea. There's like, it's a specialist skill you can acquire. Yeah.
Another thing is how veiny the hands are.
Yeah.
Look at the quality of the skin on the hands.
Well, if we get the next one, we have the quartering, making the obvious point, which is a fun fact. 49-year-old Taylor Rentz is deeply sensitive about her age and has lied about it multiple times.
Yes.
And usually I wouldn't really give a care, but what's interesting is she definitely does. She really does. If we go to the next one, we see the quartering make the point again. The official Libs of TikTok has now surpassed 700,000 followers. It has gained nearly 70,000 today alone. Thank you, 49-year-old Taylor Lorenz. Just to make sure she knows.
And what I love about this as well is like, I mean, what's she going to do? Come on, go, no, I'm 47.
No, she's going to say she's 43.
Oh, really?
Go to the next one. We have her saying this is her official age, at least according to herself. I'm 43.
Now, let's... Are you? Let's wait for Stefan Molyneux to be reinstated on Twitter so we can check what age the egg carton and how empty it is at this point.
It's missing a few. Put it lightly. She says she's 43 here. But if we get the next one, in 2020, she said she was 35 to the New York Times.
You wish you were 35.
Why'd you do that? Why? It was just, okay. If we go to the next one, in 2018, she said she was 31. Again, just to pick at random numbers by the looks of it. If we go to the next one, in 2022, she says she's 40. Sorry, nearly 40. Just talking about eggs there as well. Which is
just harvesting 41 eggs, eh? Hang on, get up. Does she freeze her eggs?
I don't know if she's done. A few years ago, she's rants about culture.
Talking
about freezing eggs.
She's frozen multiple... 41 eggs she's got frozen.
Miss Lorenz, 31.
Miss Lorenz, you're nearly 50. When are you planning on trying to use those eggs? And that's not a guaranteed thing, as we have covered in the past, in fact. So good luck with that.
But I love how she's 31, she swears, and she's signed off on the procedure at 28.
Right.
No, none of these numbers make sense.
Right.
But like, none of them make any consistent sense.
Also, you're going to be a childless spinster.
We go to the next one as well. In 2022, she says she's 40. She just pick a number. That's how old she is, according to herself. And if we go to Wikipedia, her own Wikipedia is guessing. So if you go down, you see born. So if we could scroll down there, you can see the born section. October 21st, 1984 to 1987. She was born in between 1984 and 1987. We don't know when.
I don't know.
Confusion. She also won an award for being 40 under 40. That was in 2019. It's just like, none of the numbers, there are multiple instances of her saying she's a different age and none of them make any sense.
I mean, looking at that picture from 2 years ago, I'm inclined to believe she's over 40.
Again, this could be completely irrelevant, but it's just such a weird thing that she's very sensitive about this and keeps lying about it.
Mm.
If we go to the next one, what's funny is I also found out we are more certain about when Kim Jong-il was born than when she was. Scroll down on this. The North Korean Propaganda and Agitation Department holds a discrepancy of about a year between the Soviets and themselves about when Kim Jong-il was born, which is less discrepancy than Taylor Lorentz, well, her propaganda department gives about when she was born, and she's very, very upset about that. But back to the billboard, because that's a whole side story, which is just a weird rabbit hole into God knows where. But we see Tim Pool responding to her, saying here, "I'm not discrediting your reporting. Done that yourself. I repeatedly said that it was justified, and publishing a name we can argue the merits. I'm calling you out for lying when you and your Washington Post denied linking to private details. You published Lib's private address. Just own it."
Yep.
And then if we go to the next one, he continues making the point. "I'm glad to hear you're not upset and your friends and fans are also happy. It's the way it should be. You make a statement, I contest it. We all had our points heard. You on CNN, mine on Times Square."
Yes, now, who got seen more?
And also who won.
I mean, but like, no one watches CNN.
Yeah, she's going on CNN Plus being like, this is my big break. And meanwhile, Tim Pool is just storming her. Again, just another guy. I mean, I love how the social media world works now. Like the old corporate press outlets are so pathetic.
You can see them becoming isolated.
Yeah,
they're an incestuous network that's growing smaller and smaller by the day.
They live outside of the public.
Yes,
and also don't influence the public increasingly. If we go to the next one, we have Taylor crying. She's very upset about this. "My family and friends are not happy. Oh, I wonder why. They're disappointed in their daughter. They have been subject to a non-stop stream of hateful attacks, doxing, and violent attacks driven by this baseless campaign. Happy to hear you're moving on."
Maybe if you didn't start doxing people, then this wouldn't have happened to you, Taylor.
Psychopath. I mean, real psychopath.
Oh yeah, just lying.
"I've been subject to a non-stop stream of hateful attacks. I've been doxed. I've had violent attacks driven because of this baseless campaign." Just go to the next one.
I love it. That's a brilliant... Sorry, just baseless campaign. What did Libs of TikTok do to you, Taylor Lorenz?
No one knew who the hell you were.
Yeah.
Literally no one. I mean, there was. I found Ricky reading her Wikipedia page. The most interesting about her life is that she's being sued for defamation, because apparently, according to the plaintiff, that she made up some stuff while working for the New York
Times. Oh, I could believe that.
It's just like, that's the most interesting thing in your life, is being an alleged liar.
Yeah.
And then you decide to go out and be evil. And so
wakes up. Oh, I think I'll be evil today, just like every other day.
Look at the next one. We have Libs of TikTok responding to the psychopath here, just being like, "Jesus Christ. Every single person sharing my last name got harassed. This psycho showed up to people's homes who have the same last name as me. I received dozens of death threats. Now she's crying the victim. What a hypocritical lunatic." I mean, it's 100%. Again, big L there.
Yep.
Lost in the ratio, if nothing else.
Yep.
Just, how are you losing?
Good.
Random Twitter
account.
A
meme account, basically.
Yes. I mean, it's a very good meme.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love Libs of TikTok, but like... Again, the prestige of the New York Times and the Washington Post must just be at all-time low at this point.
We go to the next one. We can see Libs of TikTok continue to just do good work, because she actually has something useful to do in life.
Oh, not humanizing babies.
Yeah, so this is more exposing of the left by posting their own opinions. And this is a leftist who is accusing the right, the evil right, of wanting to humanize babies.
Good.
The only reason...
Babies are great.
So the right wants you to check up on your pregnancy and find out if it's a boy or a girl. And the only reason the right does that is because they want you to not kill it.
That's true.
That's the bad thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Let's play the clip.
"A lot of anti-abortion advocates are also seemingly really into the idea of finding out their child's sex really early on. And I think this is because of this like underlying cultural idea that gender confers humanity. And, you know, if you're against people aborting fetuses, you need to construct them as like fully people. And one of the mechanisms to do so is by inferring, by putting gender on them. So, like, you know, we often call fetuses like it, or we call even early babies, we often call it, you know, babies, like it's crying, because it's like not quite gotten gender and it's not quite become a person. But like a lot of conservatives who are really anti-abortion and really pro-reproduction, they're obsessed with gendering their children before they're even born. So they come into a world fully gendered because it's like how to humanize them and to stop people from being able to have safe access to abortions.
That is disgusting. If you call a baby that's crying it, you are the problem.
I mean, you could argue that maybe you've not picked a name, so you're still calling it baby. I've seen parents do that. Yeah,
but that's baby, the thing. Maybe, yeah.
But he's also arguing because it's still an it when it's crying and fully formed. That's as human as the you know, conception, and therefore is still presumably allowed to be aborted.
Well, that's where they're getting at.
I mean, that is his entire argument.
And well, the left have been. What was? Have you seen the James Franco thing where the professor is arguing that babies aren't people and therefore they can be killed? And you can see James Franco's face just like, you want to kill a baby?
It's like, that's what they're telling you.
Yeah. Well, it's just an it, you see, because it hasn't chosen its gender.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's a he or a she. Get over it.
Also, leftist garbage of like, oh yeah, society picks the gender. We're checking its sex.
Yeah.
In the
Shut
stomach.
Up.
And you're like, yeah, that's society.
Yeah. Disgusting.
I'm sick of the left. Just insane. I'm glad they're leaving. If we go to the next one, we can see this here, which is some news. So if we go to the next one, we can see the news, which is that apparently, if we go to the next one, please, we can see the news that there is some school in which they're handing out pizza and dessert for students who are brown-skinned because, can you guess?
What?
The students are having to deal with white people.
So they're getting free pizzas?
Yes, they're getting pizza and dessert for school for lunchtime. They're taking them out of class so they can feed them it.
Because they have to deal with white people.
There's segregated time slots for the different kinds of browns as well, of course. So we have African Americans at 6. then next we have the Hispanics in their own segregated
literally
space.
The racial hierarchy: the blacks first, then the Hispanics,
and then
two
or more background students. We have the mixed class, in which they're going to get
the mulattoes last.
We get different kinds of
second to last,
pizza
the
and cake as well. That you have, you know, the full spicy meat feast for the African students, and then by the time you get to the mixed race, I don't know, it's just cheese.
I mean, just actual racial hierarchy.
Yeah, the reasoning given here: the lunches will give Mrs. Young a chance to talk with students about how to cope with being a student in a predominantly white school. I love the wording there. Not the kids.
Yeah,
it gives an opportunity for Mrs. Young.
Yeah.
Not for the kids to learn anything, not for the kids to deal with anything, because being in a school with white kids is not a problem.
this is why Libs of TikTok is doing a good service.
Yeah. Mrs. Young's special time needs to be exposed for what it is. Creepy and groomerish. In this case,
racist. Really, really racist.
Well, grooming for critical race theory. Yeah. I mean, being like, I know it's tough, you know.
You're black.
White kids.
That must suck for you. I'm here to help. A white woman. I'm going to segregate you off from those white kids.
Yeah, the next one we
have. Don't worry, I'll take care of you.
Some other lunatic warning about fascism, because fascism is when free speech, that's his argument here. We don't have time for it. It's as mind-numbing as you can guess.
Yes, fascism is when there's free speech.
We go to the next one. We can have Amazon, who are having a meltdown, along with everyone else in Silicon Valley. This one, what can you guess? It's Matt Walsh.
Oh, good.
It's Matt Walsh, who published a book about Johnny's walrus
and
how the walrus isn't a walrus. So that's evil. It got to number one best-selling for kids because it's actually reflecting of reality and like anti-racist baby or any other.
Johnny likes to play make-believe by saying, I identify as.
Mm.
That's okay. Mm.
So we're going to listen to the internal conversations and all hands on deck moments in Amazon, apparently, in which they've already reported the books, don't worry, and we'll enjoy them freaking out. Let's play.
The recommendations that this customer received and that other customers frequently reach out to us about that they're receiving. It's about a book called Johnny the Walrus. And I want to be very clear, the next two are about books. And I saw someone say, oh joy, we're going to talk about one of them, because it's been a very traumatic experience for transgender Amazonians and our transgender customers.
Transgender
what
Amazonians.
I don't want to come out of this is slamming the books team with a bunch of tickets. They are already aware of this. There are things in this space that are happening. But Johnny the Walrus is a bit of a problematic book. Not a bit. It is It is not a bit of a problem. It's one hell of a problem. And I would preface this about what the book's about, but the customer
would going lips to of TikTok. To. Oh, how is this happening to us?
Also, would you like a copy of Mein Kampf?
So,
that still sells it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead and listen to this customer.
I got my copy.
Teaching kids to kill, well, to bully transgenders. Yeah, to bully them into committing suicide, the LGBTQIA, especially transgenders. You are selling a manual to how to teach kids to bully other kids to commit suicide.
So there you are. They're all listening to phone calls of Karens calling up, being mad, and deciding that this is hell on earth, must censor this evil, evil book from Matt Walsh.
Absolutely mad.
Points out reality. That's the state of Amazon at the moment as well. I did have some more stuff of just the other weirdness. As you can see here, we'll go through it very quickly. It was just the Department of Education, Biden's, is being told to tell the science teachers throughout the state schools to teach that, well, not everyone who produces eggs is a woman.
No.
That's going to be science within the American States. I mean,
that is true. I mean, older women who have no eggs left are...
They're arguing that men can produce eggs.
Oh, right.
So science class is going to be teaching your kids.
Well, good news.
Again, loads of TikTok exposing that. And if we go to the last one here, we have...
And I've got that the wrong way around anyway. Don't worry about it.
The funniest one here, which I just found, is some transgender non-binary teacher promoting themselves to their students. Because, of course... I just can't get over that sentence, though. What are you transitioning into?
I was born in the wrong body. Even though I was born a girl, I feel more like a boy inside, but I don't fully feel like either. So, good luck.
He is transitioning into being non-binary because he's not transitioning into being a girl, but he thinks he's born a girl. I mean, how deeply confused.
If you were born a girl, I'm just going to say you're a girl. Okay.
I'm just going to say this person is clearly mad. Yeah. I mean, that one especially. But there we go. There's the endless list of just insane stuff. And Taylor Lorenz having a big old cry about Tim Pool's evil, scary billboard. And good job, Tim. It's very good. Tip of the beanie.
So, it's fascinating that there is a cultural shift moving away from the left at the moment. And the question is, well, what is it moving to? And weirdly, it seems to be moving towards the dissident right, which is not something I actually expected, because I would have thought this would have been off limits for almost every mainstream publication to talk about, at least in a reasonably fair way, except suddenly Curtis Yarvin got favourable coverage in Vanity Fair. Do you know who Curtis Yarvin is?
The Dark Enlightenment guy, right?
Yeah, Mencius Moldbug. Like, I was very surprised that they weren't just calling him a Nazi, and so we're going to go through it. But before we do, if you don't know what I'm talking about, and there's no particular reason that you should know what I'm talking about, because this is rather niche political theory, really, we have a premium podcast called The Origins of the Dark Enlightenment, in which we explain where it all comes from. And as you can see by the thumbnail, they basically believe that liberalism itself is the problem. And the thing about all of these sort of dissident movements, in the same way that the critical race theorists also felt that liberalism is the problem, but they are operating in two totally different directions. What is interesting, though, is that they have a good critique of liberalism, and they do have some good points that the liberals should listen to. So I will link, that will be linked in the description. Definitely go and watch that, because it's actually very, very useful to know. And this also brings on to the thesis of conservatism that I wrote, to say, well, okay, if liberalism is to be one thing, what is the alternative? And one alternative, I think, is actually a kind of authentic conservatism that isn't just doing what the left did 10 years ago, a sort of self-generative conservatism. But again, we'll leave those linked in the description. You can read them in your own time. So anyway, let's move on to Curtis Yarvin and the Thielverse getting favorable coverage in Vanity Fair. This is mad. Like, what's going on?
I mean, is the reporter just very based? Or?
No, I don't think James Pogue is very based.
I'm looking him up.
So anyway, inside the New Right, where Peter Thiel is placing his biggest bets, they're not MAGA, they're not QAnon, Curtis Yarvin and the Rising Right are crafting a different strain of conservative politics. Shockingly positive framing here. Like, this wouldn't have happened 3-4 years ago, right? So they go to the National Conservatism Conference. Now, I'd never even heard of this, to be honest, but it's certainly not led by the Republican GOP, because the Republicans are a bunch of liberals. as in literally classical liberals. This is a, you know, Whig ideology. And that's not what these people are. And of course, it begins with a woman called Amanda Milius taking a journalist to this, which I'm surprised anyone would bother doing that, frankly, in this day and age. But I guess it turned out right. Don't screw us over. But anyway, he goes on, and I'm just going to read a few bits out because it's fascinating, right? He says, this was not Trump world, even if many of the people in the room saw Trump as a useful tool. And the parties aren't always this lame. NatsCon, as this conference is known, has grown into a big tent gathering for a whole range of people who want to push the American right in a more economically populist, culturally conservative, and assertively nationalist direction. How does that sound to you, Callum?
I mean, that's kind of what we were trying to do in UKIP for the United Kingdom. So
yes, indeed. That's one of the things that people didn't realize about UKIP is it wasn't like, you know, neoliberal conservatism 2.0 at all. It draws everyone from Israel hawks to fusty paleocon professors to mainstream figures like Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. But the most of the media attention that the conference tracks, it focuses on a cohort of rosy young blazer-wearing activists and writers, a crop of people representing the American right's radical young intellectuals, as the headline in the New Republic would soon put it, or conservatism's terrifying future, as David Brooks called them in The Atlantic, as in actual conservatives. And the letter, of course, like, oh God, this is a problem. The podcasters, bro-ish anonymous Twitter posters, online philosophers, artists, and amorphous scenesters in this world are variously known as dissidents, neo-reactionaries, post-leftists, or the heterodox fringe. And they're all often grouped for convenience under the heading of America's New Right. They have a wildly diverse set of political backgrounds, ranging from 17th century Jacobite royalists to Marxist cultural critics to so-called reactionary feminists to the Unabomber Ted Kaczynski, whom they sometimes refer to with the semi-ironic affection of Uncle Ted. We'll have to do a book club on the Industrial Society at some point.
I need to read it, yeah.
I'll bring in my copy. It's a fascinating read. Don't even know why he had to become a terrorist. People would have read it. People would have read it on its own merits. He was a professor.
I mean, I wonder if he's aware of like the miniature fan club he has. I mean, I presume yes.
Maybe. He's dying of cancer at the moment, though, isn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, everyone sort of gets big as they die as well. In philosophy, don't they?
That's true. It's a broad tent, is what they're saying, which is good. It is good that there should be a broad tent. Which is to say that the New Right is not part of the conservative movement as most people in America would understand it. That's because the conservative movement in America isn't really conservative. It's ideological and it's liberal. It's Republican, which is specifically an outgrowth of English liberal philosophy. One other thing as well, right, is the point is, as they say, the project to overthrow the thrust of progress. At least such as liberals understand the world. As in, this is postmodern conservatism. And this is a sort of parochial morality of us and ours, rather than the universal morality of the GOP. And that's very scary to the left, because of course they are the apex universalists. There's a reason that the GOP keep losing every fight to the left. It's because they're like, yeah, well, we should have universal morality. And the left like, yeah, but you don't go nearly far enough for our tastes. And so the GOP keep losing, because they're on the same rails, basically. And this is what the Dark Enlightenment folks are saying. So they say, these worldviews, run counter to the American narrative of the last century, that growth and technological innovation are inevitably leading us towards a better future. It's a position that has become quietly edgy and cool in new tech outposts like Miami and Austin, and in downtown Manhattan, where the new rightish politics are in, and signifiers like a demure cross necklace have become markers of a transgressive chic. No one is leading this movement, but it does have key figures. Good framing here, but isn't that interesting? Like, you know, Elon Musk's like, yeah, I'm going to move Twitter to Miami. Well, what's cool in Miami? Parochial postmodern conservatism. Very interesting. But also, how are they wrong? Is technological progress leading us to an actual better future? You're not in favor of the Great Reset, are you?
Well, in some ways it's much better, obviously. But in other ways, it's just giving more and more power to a smaller and smaller number of people. And the ability to do that.
But it's also fundamentally changing the nature of what it is to be a person living in this society.
Yeah, to be human is very strange now.
Yes.
Compared to anyone in the past.
Yes. I mean, and literally within my lifetime.
I mean, speaking of that, actually, I was over in Exmouth. And I went to the Exmouth Museum. Great museum. Go and give it a view if you're there. And went in. I was looking at the Victorian stuff. And I mentioned to my mother, so, you know, it's kind of weird. You can look at the Victorian stuff and you almost think you're kind of like them. Because they're starting to look modern, unlike the medieval people.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I looked over at the World War II stuff and I went, huh, it's actually kind of true of them as well.
Mm.
Like, I look at them and I think, none of you have phones. Mm. You're all still using these plastic
ones. There was a video of, like, high schoolers in the 90s going around the other day, and they all look happy and healthy. Like, they all look normal. None of them are depressed. Like, they're all just prattling around, being normal. I'm like, man, that was peak liberal civilization right there. But it's gone and it's never coming back. So something else has to replace it. But anyway, things used to be better. It was better when we didn't have phones. I'm telling you, man. Better when we didn't have phones. Anyway, so one person backing this is Peter Thiel, the billionaire who helped fund NatCon and who was given the conference's opening address. In recent years, Thiel has grown increasingly involved in the politics of this younger and weirder world, becoming something like a nefarious godfather or genial rich uncle, depending on your perspective, which is excellent because any new serious cultural movement needs some elite backing. I'm actually working on a deep think about how elites are captured at the moment, because the critical race theorists have given us a really good framework for how this happens. And this is definitely one of the early steps of it. You need elite backing, dissident elites to come and be like, yeah, no, I hate the way things are going. Let's overturn it. You can see I've been reading their thinkers, right? This is Burnham. Anyway, Thiel has given more than $10 million to super PACs supporting the men's candidacies. And those are personally close to him, so various politicians. Vance is a former employee of Thiel's Mithril Capital. It's interesting, isn't it? Mithril Capital. He also owns one called Palantine. Do you know what Mithril is?
I just remember it from RuneScape.
Well, you should remember it from Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah.
It's the armor. And the Palantine, I think it's called. Or the Palantir, sorry. Palantir. It's the ball that I think is Merry takes from Gandalf and sees the Eye of Sauron in. And it's like, you know, Peter Thiel is naming his companies after Lord of the Rings, like obscura, you know, weird. And it's like, oh, that's good to know. Very, you know, dog whistles. That's what I say. Dog whistling the Lord of the Ring fandom. But anyway, so these are all the people that she mentions, Thiel, Vance, and Masters, are all friends with Curtis Yarvin. Probably need thunderbolts and lightning cracks at that point. A 48-year-old ex-programmer and blogger who has done more than anyone to articulate the world historical critique and popularize key terms of the new right. You'll often hear people in this world, again under many layers of irony, call him things like your Lord Yarvin or our prophet. Again, very fascinating and positive framing of Yarvin himself. He is one of the key figures who helped the dissident right find its feet in the early 2000s and like sort of 2000-2010. And he sort of started becoming like, I mean, I don't know if popular is the word, because it's not something that has a mass audience yet. But there's definitely things about his critique that have really resonated with a bunch of online thinkers. And honestly, I'm one of them, because he does have some good concepts, like the concept of the cathedral, to understand the left-wing belief system. Why do they all write the same article on the same day? It's like, well, it looks like a conspiracy, but it's not. It's actually that something has happened, a flare has gone up, and the beacons have been lit, and they're all like, oh, I've got to get my article out to show that I'm on the same team. And so, and then, you know, as soon as these articles come out, the people running the social media companies are, oh, I've got to deplatform Alex Jones, because, you know, this is the organism that is the religion of leftism has to pull in certain directions in order to maintain its power. And I also reference specifically another one of Yarvin's concepts in my Politics of Warhammer 40,000. You can scroll down a bit, because I can't remember what number it was. Scroll down to the list of things. It's part 8, How Cthulhu Swims Left. This was a really, really good way of conceptualizing why politics in the Overton Window is just continually shifting towards the left in Western society. And, you know, no matter what happens, every political event is another leftward shift, another, which, of course, you know, leaves the right completely on its arse and out of the discourse. And I think I can actually explain how that happens. And I think it begins with Marcuse's repressive tolerance. But that's free, in fact, so go and give that a read. I'm really proud of that as well. It's really good. But anyway, returning to the article. They say, people often struggle with what to make of Thiel's involvement in this ecosystem. Last year, journalist Max Chafkin published a biography of Thiel titled The Contrarian, in which he described Yarvin as the house political philosopher for a network often called Thielverse. There's also a highly online set of Substack writers, podcasters, and anonymous Twitter posters, quote, our true intellectual elite, as one podcaster describes them. This is academic agents, friends. Hey, lads. This group encompasses everyone from rich crypto bros and tech executives to the back to the landers and disaffected members of the American intellectual class. But they share a basic worldview that individualist liberal ideology, increasingly bureaucratic governments, and big tech are all combining into a world that is at once tyrannical, chaotic, and devoid of the systems of value and morality that give human life richness and meaning. As Blake Masters recently put it, a dystopian hell world. Obviously true. I mean, like I said, they have a good critique of what is happening here. I mean, that's just indisputable. This is all happening. Vance believes that the well-educated and culturally liberal American elite has greatly benefited from globalization, the financialization of our economy, and the growing power of big tech. This has led an Ivy League intellectual and management class, a quasi-aristocracy he calls the regime, to adopt a set of economic and cultural interests that directly oppose those of people in places like Middleton, Ohio, where he grew up. Demonstrably true.
Yeah, everything about this is just an explanation of how things are, while we can literally point to the evidence.
Yes. So, why would this even be something controversial? In the Vancean view, this class has no stake in what people on the new right often call the real economy, the farm and factory jobs that once sustained middle-class life in middle America, which is why they're so happy to farm them out to foreign countries. This is a fundamental difference between new right figures like Vance and the Reaganite right wingers of their parents' generation. To Vance, and he said this, culture war is class warfare. Very interesting. And this was what, I'm going to do an analysis of this at some point as well. This is what John Carpenter was critiquing in They Live, with the yuppies who have taken over and are just, everything's about greed and money now. And this is harming the actual society of the economic prospects of the people who were relying on those small town jobs in order to get ahead. And of course, the sort of Reaganite neoliberals don't care about that at all. That's not how they see things. As long as numbers go up, world must be better. It's like, well, not entirely. I mean, Vance here says, I've got to be honest with you. I really don't care what happens in Ukraine. Well, who does? Why would I? What have I got to do with Ukraine? A flick at the fact that he thinks the American-led global order is about as much enriching defense contractors and Hunter Biden and think tank types as it is about defending America's interests, which is absolutely true. I do care about the fact that my community right now is in my community right now, the leading cause of death among 18 to 45 year olds is Mexican fentanyl. How dare he have a parochial local morality that cares about the real people that he knows in his life?
Does he not care about global geopolitics?
Yes. You know that Russia's invading Ukraine, don't you? It's like, dude, I have to walk past drug addicts on my way to work who are dying from fentanyl overdoses. Can we build a wall? Anyway, his criticisms of big tech as enemies of Western civilization often get lost in the run of Republican outrage over Trump being kicked off Twitter and Facebook, but they go much deeper than this. Vance believes that the regime has sold an elusive story that consumer gadgets and social media are constantly making our lives better, even as wages stagnate and technology feeds into an epidemic of depression. Obviously true. Do not let your children use smartphones. End of story. This is just such an obviously true statement. It's like, well, he believes this. It's like, yeah, but that's because it's real. Part of why people have trouble describing this new right is because there's a bunch of people who believe the system that organizes our society and government, which most of us think of as normal, is actually bizarre and insane. Anyone over 40 can say that this system is bizarre and insane. Like, this is the reason Libs of TikTok is famous. So all they do is show the bizarre insanity of this system. Like, sorry, if you... And I love the way... Well, they think that we're crazy. So that's because you are crazy.
But you will have jobs as well. Like, you somehow manage to thrive in this society.
Well, that's because they're supporters and members of it. They're sycophants of it.
Yeah, sure. But like this, no other situation would they be able to do anything. Like, nowhere in Afghanistan would these people be able to function.
Yes. Only in the modern... They are, I think it would be Marcuse who would say that they're a product of the liberal capitalist system. Like, you're right, they couldn't exist anywhere else, but they wouldn't be produced anywhere else. And these sort of people are only produced in this kind of society. And as they say, they think of it as bizarre and insane, which, of course, the leftist city dweller thinks is completely normal. Which naturally makes them look bizarre and insane to the people who think this system is normal. You'll hear these people talk about our globalized consumerist society as clown world. Oh no. Getting kids to chop off their dicks and having Disney persuade them they're gay is peak normality. What are you talking about? It's totally normal, bro. Of course you're insane. Look at you. just look at you and compare yourself to any other civilization, any other place in the world, in any other portion of time, and be like, right, so did they do this then? No, they didn't. Oh, then we're not the normal ones. Anyway, I'm going to end it there, because this is actually a really, really long article, and we could talk about this all day. But there's one thing to end on, right? So at the very end of the article, he says, I asked Vance to tell me, on the record, what he'd like American liberals who thought that he was proposing a fascist takeover of America to understand. It's like, what's fascist about this? I'd like there to be less fentanyl in my community, please. I'd like you to stop grooming children to be gay and chop off their bits, please.
Well, this is basically fascism. I'm leaving.
What a Nazi you are. He spoke earnestly. I think the cultural world you operate in is incredibly biased against the leaders of his movement, like me in particular. He encouraged me to resist this tendency, which he thought was the product of a media machine leading us towards a soulless dystopia that none of us want to live in. That impulse, he said, is fundamentally in the service of something far worse than anything in your wildest nightmares than what you see here. They aren't fascists in any way, shape, or form. They're not Enlightenment thinkers in any way, shape, or form. I don't even think you can reasonably call them nationalists, because nationalism is an Enlightenment project. They are something that is pre-theoretical in this way. They start way before the Enlightenment. They're drawing upon truly ancient ideas of what it is to be human, as I understand them. But I thought that was fascinating, and I think it's really interesting how the distant right is finally going mainstream.
Let's go to the video comments.
Good morning, Lotus Eaters. I just finished watching a video titled What Millennials Stole from the Zoomers, and I have to disagree with Carl's jab at the millennials. I would say that two things have contributed to what Zoomers are today. First is the lack of foresight of Gen X. In most cases, they are parents of the Zoomers. The second is the blind admiration of the technology that has sprouted in millennials and was left alone, so it grew even more in Zoomers. That resulted in people who are disconnected from the reality and have no respect for the other people.
No, I don't really agree with that. I agree that the Gen Xers, who are the parents of the Zoomers, have failed in their task of giving them good frameworks within which to work and assuming that the power structures around them are either morally justified or neutral, and that the technology that's been produced won't have any long-term detrimental effects. But the active debauching of the children is done by millennials, and we see this all the time. So that's maybe I should have been more clear about that.
The next one.
Carl, I really enjoyed the video you did. The Zoomers are screwed. You absolutely nailed the issues and problems that my generation is going through. However, much like other infamous internet personality magnet, you've correctly identified and diagnosed the problem, but failed to offer a solution. The Zoomers are either going to be the weak men who create bad times, or the strong men who create good ones. Zoomers have been deprived of suffering was a sentiment that really stuck with me, and a lot of my generational contemporaries feel the same.
So, to be clear, right, I didn't mean to say that the Generation X did nothing wrong. I have plenty of critiques of my generation. But it is Generation X didn't proliferate this kind of weird perversity and try and enforce it on children. Generation X still is fundamentally socially conservative, although it's tolerant of what the progressives are trying to do, which is a problem. I'm being called Ted Kaczynski now.
I don't know. I was a bit upset about the smearing of Uncle Ted there as not providing a solution. I mean, he did. Just
yeah. Abandon industrial society and return to the woods. Screw your surrogate activities.
Use the mail service.
if it helps, on Monday I recorded a follow-up to that video in which I do lay out what I think is the solution. And the first part of it is realigning our worldviews entirely. Again, I think the Dark Enlightenment critique is valid, and I think they have some good points. And you'll be, I think, surprised and very reluctant to do what I'm suggesting in the video. But that'll be out next week, I imagine.
Go next one.
Hey, guys. So I have a friend. Well, no longer friends with them because they became left-wing. And I decided, when the whole Twitter situation first started, I should put a camera in their house so I can finally record their reaction to an Elon Musk buys Twitter. And here you go. Beautiful. Absolutely every left-wing reaction right there to Elon Musk buying Twitter. This is God's gift to the world.
It is fantastic.
I must say, we are blessed to have a man like Elon, though. Think of all the billionaires. Just all of them, right? Like, not just the tech, but all of them. And all of them are kind of mediocre. and money focused and not interesting and not
or
really
evil.
Doing, yeah, or like the good they do.
Bill
is
Gates actively evil.
But even like if you take a libertarian position on this, they offer good by doing their services, right? You know, they're doing good by yep. Amazon's deliveries being cheap. But even that's yep. kind of like, it's not really proper because you're making loads of money. Whereas burning yep. a bunch of your money just to send a message to let the progressives know that they deserve to be punished and they know it too.
Do you know what I'm ready for? I think that 2022, here's a prediction that I don't think it's going to come true, but I think it would be great. Base Jeff Bezos. That's what I'd like to see. They hate Jeff Bezos already.
Did you see him trying to attack Elon?
Yeah, I know, but he hates Elon Musk.
But why?
I don't know. Bo knows more about it than I do. But I just, you know, okay, he might hate Elon Musk, but he's going to be constantly attacked by the left for being a billionaire forever. So he may as well lean into it and be like, you know, I'm the landlord of basically everyone. Shut up.
I'm hoping, but they so often just do a Bill Gates and lean into the opposite.
Yeah, I know. But I want to see base Jeff Bezos. Okay. Well,
go to the next one.
Okay, Callum. So the reason that I was fighting solo against everybody at once is because we were playing what's called one against the field. It's a zombies-like game mode where every injury that I inflict on the enemy team remains until the next round, and anybody that I kill joins my team for the next round. And so my team grows bigger while the other team grows smaller until eventually there's only one person left, and then they get to be the one against the field next. It's very fun.
Okay, so it's like playing zombies on Counter-Strike. Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds like good fun.
The next one.
So I have been looking all across Danish news media to see if we are still sending refugees to Rwanda. And it has been impossible to find anything. The best thing I could find were articles saying that Boris Johnson sent refugees there and faced criticism for it. And by the way, we are doing it too, and then move on. So it looks like we're doing it and no one cares. Right now, everything is about climate change and Ukraine, and nobody cares about sending immigrants to Rwanda. We're just doing it in secret, which is hilarious.
Yeah, but Denmark's totally based against the immigrant problem anyway.
Seems like Denmark went through the worst parts like everyone else. And unlike Germany and Sweden deciding to accept it, yeah. We're like, no, well, this is cancelled. We're getting rid of this.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the old stories as well. I mean, out of everything, looking back, Danish history will be glorious in this regard. Yeah. The modern era. Like the one where they had the Syrian...
They did the right thing.
Some Syrian migrants turned up and they went, oh, not again. Right, okay, take all their valuables and let the press know.
Put them on an island somewhere.
Well, they took all their valuables as payment for their welfare and then let the press know, and then that was it. They never had to do it to anyone else.
Yeah. So they also dumped them on an island as well.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. They didn't need you on where we live.
Put them on a boat. Just
like, seriously, the British government should put them on some random uninhabited Scottish island, just build an institution there, drop off money, drop off food.
Yeah.
It's like, well,
by helicopter.
Yeah, you're alive, aren't you? You're not being killed.
Like it's a Sentinelese tribe.
Yeah, exactly. Like, literally, it's like, well, what did you think you were coming here for? Well, we wanted to hang out in your cities in the free hotel. Well, too bad.
Well, you wanted to stab people in Glasgow hotels.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I Googled just Denmark, Rwanda to see what's coming up in the English stuff, because you said Denmark, it's not happening. And there's a bunch of articles from Reuters, again, just being like, yeah, Britain's doing it and that's bad, but also Denmark's doing it. Moving on. So, great. The next one.
A lady was asking what I was reading. I replied, The Chrysalids by John Wyndham. It's about an ultra-conservative religious society seeking to preserve its purity after an unspecified future global catastrophe has caused tremendous mutations. Oh, sounds similar to The Handmaid's Tale, she observed. Well, sort of, but Wyndham is better at making his characters sympathetic and understandable, and fleshes out the world he created with greater perspectives. Oh, really? Is that because John Wyndham is a man? Yes.
Also, The Handmaid's Tale is a good idea.
Did he give an excuse about how the world was made? Because I've not read it, but I know apparently the reason is that in The Handmaid's Tale, a bunch of extremists just took over the country and changed the constitution, and it's never explained how or why. It's just it happened.
But it's also a good idea.
It was Carl and his friends who changed the constitution. Go to the next one.
Honestly, the thing that shocks me most about this whole Elon buying Twitter thing is how absolutely positive of statements Jack Dorsey's releasing about it. It does not just sound like cope. I mean, it sounds like, oh my God, you saved my company. Thank you. Kind of makes me wonder, with how much Twitter changed and clamped down when he left, how much he wanted it to be a free place and was just being hamstrung by the board. Because even as CEO and founder, he only owned 2% of his own company. I wonder if he was just tied up the way they tried to do to Elon.
You know, I actually am becoming more sympathetic to this view, because if you look in like 2007 or whatever, when it was founded, I mean, they called it the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party, because back when the Democrats weren't woke.
You can tell he didn't go willingly either.
Yeah.
Remember when that happened?
Yeah. And as soon as he left, it was an absolute crackdown. Like, you know, and it was like, wow, Jack was a restraining force on the censorious elements in Twitter. So hopefully he'll be back M posting within the next couple of months.
No. could you imagine if he did?
Just an end, Jack.
Do it again.
Just an end. See what happens.
Hey, Callum, if you thought Command & Conquer's Generals was politically incorrect, well, let me introduce you to Syrian Warfare, a 2017 RTS game from Russia where you play as pro-Assad forces against Western-backed Islamists in the current Syrian civil war.
Wazir said you have an RPG buried in your yard from the war with Israel?
Of course. What kind of Arab would I be if I didn't have an RPG buried in my yard? I'll get my sons and I'll be there soon.
That looks amazing, and yes, I am going to try and get that on Steam.
That's Callum's evening sorted.
Yeah. Blasting Al-Asuri Al-Bashar's as we storm in with a helicopter. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. Thank you for that recommendation. Go to the next one.
Hey, guys, since Elon has been on everybody's ear for a couple of weeks, I wanted to say something that I had on my mind way before he actually started purchasing Twitter. Thing is, the left hates him for much longer than the last 2 weeks. And I think the reason for that is because he is capitalism's golden boy. He is what Milton Friedman and Thomas Sowell mean when they talk about capitalists in a successful and useful for society way. He does not bode well with the left's idea of the evil capitalist. And that drives him mad because it's outside of their worldview.
That's a great point. He's a shining example of someone who isn't like a remote weird billionaire.
Maybe, but it's just the way he was treated before this. Like, the fact that he could go on essentially, like, enemy TV stations. Hmm. I mean, all of them. The Colbert Report or Saturday Night Live or whatnot.
Look at the
and
way...
it would all be courteous to him. Like, there was no sense of hostility. It was a bit of mistrust.
Yeah, but that was the thing. You can tell that they recognize that he's outside of the club, right?
They can't control him.
No, and you can tell they recognize that. I mean, I actually, because Elon Musk has become a big name, like, I get emails when people, like, comment on old videos and stuff like that from YouTube. And a couple of years ago, I'd made a video called Elon Musk Did Nothing Wrong after going on Joe Rogan's podcast and having a spliff. And it's like, oh my God, you know, like, he is right. They have been attacking him for much longer because he's so obviously not in their club. He's so obviously in Joe Rogan's club, you know.
I don't deny that aspect, but there was seemingly an attempt to not be hostile to him and instead try and bring him in.
Oh, yeah.
And it failed.
Well, obviously.
It failed badly.
he obviously doesn't have the disposition required to become part of their club.
No.
And that's obvious to them.
The next one.
Tony D and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines. The Strand in Lakewood, New Jersey. The theater is the home of a ghost that was seen twice in two different time periods by two different people who had never met each other but described the exact same translucent woman
who's
hovering around the theater. I feel bad for the ghosts that are trapped in entertainment centers. They have to suffer through the same woke crap that's being produced these days over and over again.
I mean, I cannot think of a worse place to be a ghost.
You also can't disprove it.
Nor can I disprove Bigfoot, apparently. So.
No, we will do that. We will do that. Punk Gun says, all hail King Elon. Yeah. Callum says, Hitler thought he could kick in the rotten door of the Soviet Union, the whole edifice would collapse. Elon hasn't fully bought Twitter yet and has already collapsed. The collapse of the hegemony is underway. Go, Elon. That knighthood is just on the horizon for you. Well, yeah, I mean, it's shocking how weak the Twitter regime was. I mean, I'm sure that they are basically burning the algorithms in the background, being like, oh, yeah, no, erase it all quick. This never happened. This never happened. Because he's going to make it all public.
Yeah, I mean, the moderator side of this, so the way it actually will probably work is the same way as Facebook, which is you've got a third company, which is just some tech, know-nothing name, that you hire in, and then there's a bunch of documents that just say this is an exemption we make, this is a double standard rule that we make, and it's, you know, gonna be like 50 pages of something, and those are being burned, the digital files of those are being burned.
But I think the way the algorithm works is probably being changed as well,
maybe. I need to be specific as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're not right to demand concrete evidence. I'm not saying I have any. I'm absolutely convinced that's gonna be happening, because I'm sus when it comes to, you know, I'm very suspicious.
Yeah, you trust them.
Exactly. I don't trust them. I think that if I were in their position and I had their agenda and I had been doing what they've been doing for the last like 3 years, this is what I would have had to do it. And so now, if I got bought out by the person who totally disagrees with the thing I'm doing, I'm like, right, I've got to cover these tracks. I'll look at, you know, the numbers are springing back to life. Of course they are. You know, I'm not rigging the game against them anymore. And so, and until there's some evidence that they aren't evil, manipulative, well, Sauron-style figures, right? Until there's some evidence of that, I'm not going to change my opinion on that, even if I don't have any proof that they were hammering the scales. Anyway, Pirate Skeleton, in fact, says, you think it's possible that Twitter staff try and scrub the evidence of their heavy-handed biasing, so now the platform is starting to function the way it should have been? Yes, that's my opinion. I know you need proof, but I don't. Came to me in a dream.
I love that meme.
So, yeah. The superior one, I made it up. M1 Bing says, Elon Musk... This is what my gut instinct is telling me, and so I don't need your evidence. M1 Bing says, Elon buys Twitter, Ministry of Truth most affected. Absolutely. Edward says, what makes me particularly happy about this is that Elon opening Twitter to wider viewpoints means that finally our politicians will be faced with actual right-wing views. Hopefully this will, with this, we'll start seeing some difference in policy. This might be copium on my part, but considering how much Twitter is used by the political elite, I can hope. Also, I think Elon Swamp Town should be called Muscovy or Elondon. Elondon is pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad. I kind of like it being crap. Like, that's an attempt to make it good. I really like the idea of just being like, yeah, Elon Musk land. Not even going to try.
And it's the sort of thing he would do as well. I mean, he made a company called The Boring Company.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah, no, you are right, though. The fact that Twitter is biased in favor of the left and it's where elite opinion forms makes it so important. And this is why I saw like Academic Agent stream where they were like, well, we're not sure how important this is. This is massively important. Like this, and this is why they're screeching and melting down over it. This is really bad for them.
That's funny. They could also turn Elon Musk land into not just a theme park, but a proper workspace. But for all the
not just the theme park.
Yeah, but for all five of his companies as well. Yeah. Like you can have a Tesla production there. You can have a launch pad, you know, right next to NASA to piss them off as well because they're useless these days. And have the rockets he is launching from there just next door. And the rockets are
isn't
bigger.
Doesn't he do launching in like Texas or Florida?
Yeah, but just apparently Florida is the best area for it, or at least that's what we.
I'm surprised given the weather there.
Well, one of the. It's, you know, it falls into the sea instead of into someone's backyard.
So. Texas has coasts. Anyway, Lee says, sorry, Callum, but 62,000 people didn't join Twitter in one afternoon and follow Tucker Carlson in one day. He isn't the only personality either. It also doesn't explain the massive losses in followers for a lot of mainstream leftist personalities on the same day. Twitter is destroying the evidence before Elon shows up in the office. And they are right. This sort of thing you'd expect...
This is very typical, though, of just a news event. I mean, maybe. Of TikTok before any of this happening, you know, gaining 70,000 in a day.
Maybe, but you'd expect it to have, like, peaks, like a bell curve, right? Where you wouldn't expect it to be just chunk, massive, like that.
No, the opposite, because it's a news event. You know, it's the day that we're all signaling, as in, you know, the right is all signaling to their people and their followers.
Yeah, but
all
these things build. Like, I think there'd be a curve. You can disagree. That's fine.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not going to say you're not allowed to disagree. Like, you know, I don't look at Twitter. Alexander says, I can't wait for Elon Musk to overhaul Twitter. My uni's forcing me to suffer through an ethics class where we learn about how representation in video games is important. So to get back at them, I'm going to do my project on how Twitter is awful and how great Elon Musk's takeover will be. Good for you. Mm?
I just said I look forward to it.
Mm. Andrew says, the purchase of Twitter may be significant, but let's not oversell it. The left has been dealt a blow, but I suspect they'll merely shift to another platform. Both the influencers and the mainstream media are alike. If the mainstream media shifts, Twitter will lose some of the power it had under its leftist hegemony. Well, yeah, that is a possibility.
All the normies, so like the normie politicians who have been so irritating to deal with because they all sat on Twitter when everything was going on, and all the like Dem politicians, they're still going to stick around. Yeah. The ones who are the hardlines who are going to leave are going to be the intersectionals. But all of these people have left before, and I mean that in that they were all on Tumblr before.
Yeah.
And it was an international joke. Yeah. And it was all a meme. And if they go back to doing that, the world is a much better place.
I think there will be a left-wing attempt to create leftist Twitter, in the same way that Getter and Parler and all that, they're like rightist.
Joy Reid's already doing it. She had that lunatic on I was talking about. I can't even remember
the name.
Well, they
talk about Mastodon or something like that.
I can't even remember the name, but they said we're all going to go to that because they actually moderate the harassment.
Okay, good. Have your little leftist Twitter space.
And you know that's going to be a circle of firing squad as well.
Yes.
It'll bleed users.
But the appeal of Twitter is that you get to talk to the opposition. That's the appeal of Twitter. And so I think they will want to stay there.
They'll miss the harassment.
They'll miss dunking on people. They need it.
Not even being called the N-word. I'm leaving.
Jack Dorsey's like, right, I got you covered. Sweden says, let's not be naive about the fact that Elon is a billionaire who sells electric cars. Convincing right-wingers that e-cars are cool and owning the libs is fantastic marketing. Marketing has ignored the right too long and has found a niche of people who have been ostracized. Is he the king of the lepers or king of the grifters? I think he's king of the lepers.
He's got all that money. I don't think more money is going to motivate him to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think it's money. I mean, he seems very blasé about money.
Autistic. Yeah. It's a good thing, actually.
He's, it's deeply autistic and someone who posts on 4chan.
But no, in an honestly good way. Like, it means that his character is not some weird suit. Like, he's actually a human.
I like him, yeah. Like, he posts memes. He just talks on the internet like a person. It's nice. Omar says, the hate speech they hate to hear most is all legal speech is free speech. There is no hate speech, only speech you hate. Correct. I'll move on to the next segment. We're covering this a lot. A lot of people got a lot to say on the
That's
thing.
Best story of the year.
It is so good. It is so good. Robert says, Taylor Lorenz has used a tactic known as DAVO, which means deny, attack, and reverse victim and offender. This is a common tactic used by the left. It is not well known yet by the right. Yeah, I've never even heard of it. But that is exactly what she's doing. M1 Ping says, libs of TikTok should be given a verified checkmark so she can comment on Lorenz's tweets. I'm sure when Elon finally gets the finalized takeover of the company, that will happen. Billy says, oh, wow, did Tim actually do it? That's hilarious. Yeah, I know. Like, literally, like, the day before, I was talking to him because he tweeted out, oh, we need, like, Alex Jones back. So, what about me? He's like, oh, yeah, sorry. I was like, thanks, man. But he was saying, yeah, I've got this thing, they're not going to do it. It's like, well, maybe. And boom, there it is. I don't know if I can handle these levels of sodium. Already saturated from the last few days of Elon's feed. I know, it's good, isn't it? It's nice to have some wins. It's nice that they're taking some L's. Because we've spent so many years taking fucking L's of these bloody leftists. Silly Midon says, I wouldn't be surprised if people are so keen to learn the baby's sex so the crazy leftists can abort it for being a boy. There are probably people like that out there. After all, the leftist lesbian is suing a fertility clinic because she was promised a girl. Yeah. Charlie says, regarding Taylor Lorenz, you'd know that she has no kids because she agrees with groomer teachers. Also, that TikTok video Callum just showed put up shows the tell me you have no kids without telling me you have no kids. Yeah, I know. And, like, just such obvious... I just can't believe the dehumanization. We're here to dehumanize babies. It's like, right, have you considered you might be the villains? Like, the heroes don't go around dehumanizing babies in any story. Ever. They're not the heroes. There's, like, literally, Cruella de Vil dehumanizing the puppies. That's you.
You know your whole thing about, like, you know, Star Wars is Jedi propaganda? I'm imagining trying to do that for Cruella.
Exactly.
Like, you're the good guy in the story? Yeah. How? Give me a minute.
Well, have you not seen the Cruella film?
I think I have.
She's made out to be the victim of abuse or something, and therefore she's justified in murdering puppies.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Well, it's awful. Longshank says, we had to expose libs of TikTok in case it was a foreign actor. Then why did you still do it when you found out she was just a harmless Jewish mother?
Is she Jewish?
Well, I don't know. I didn't look at the docs.
I feel like we should just start making up rumors about her personality. Like, how could you do this to a Hispanic lady of 50?
How could you do this to a 7-foot-tall woman?
Yes.
Why would you do that?
You know what, guys, if you're listening, we're all getting back onto her anyway. Let's go and have some fun.
How could you do this to this conjoined twin?
Don't you know she has 8 kids?
8 kids and 27 grandkids. What's wrong with you? Sorry, libs of TikTok. We didn't look at your docs.
I think she'll find it funny.
Yeah. Andrew says, Taylor Lorenz needs to be indicted for doxing. Nothing short of a lengthy jail sentence will see justice done. I don't even know if it's illegal in America to dox.
I don't think so.
I can't imagine it is.
I think because it's... Well, actually, no. There is some precedent there because the incitement to hype violent stuff is very strict in the United States, but it is reasonable as well. So you have to have a location where you've done that by giving out the address. It has to be imminent. Well, okay, we live in a world where that can happen tomorrow. You tweet about it. So I think
that's Taylor Lorenz's own argument.
Yeah, I mean, well, you can actually make an argument in the Supreme Court, I would reckon, or at least I would have thought from what I know, that yes, I mean, you've got all the ingredients there for it, which is very strict in America, but she's done them all. So.
Mm. George says, even when Tim Pool does something based, he's still moderate about it and talks to that monster Lorenz like a normal person. She has a history of doxing and she doesn't regret it one bit. That billboard should have had her address. I mean, that would have been a Chad move on Paul's part, but A, it would have been no better than she, and B, they probably would have refused that. So to get, you know, and
well, the Daily Wire guys are great and they can get stuff done, but I don't think they could have convinced them to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and C, it would have been the wrong thing to do. And D, yes, Tim Pool is a moderate, and that's good. And we want him to remain a moderate, because then he's a good bellwether for how radical we're becoming. So I'll go on to the next one quickly. Jonah says, lol, at the woman complaining about the suicide in the trans community. Maybe people like you, lady, who push the people into transitioning that are responsible for the trans suicide rate. Maybe it's never being told that you're acceptable as the sex you are. Maybe it's the continual punishment for being shamed for being cis. F these people. If I were a dictator, they would be in mental hospitals without a chance of getting out. Moving on.
There's one honorable mention here I have to say.
Go on, Nick.
Innocent, pure Christian Anderson here. Mr. Anderson asks, what's the K word? No one tell him. Yeah.
And the final one, Lord Kevcroft. This has been a great episode. Cry harder, lefties. You had your time in the sun, and frankly, it was effing terrible. When you've learned how to talk like the adults, we'll be reedy and waiting. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We're out of time. If you want more from us, go to lotusseeds.com. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.